Tak a je tu 5. špeciálna epizóda podcastu Grant Up z panelovej diskusie v spolupráci so Slovakia Tech Forum Expo. Tieto panelovky sa nahrávali 20. a 21. septembra 2022 priamo na konferencii Slovakia Tech v Košiciach. Moje meno je Tomáš Pavlík, ty počúvaš podcast Grant Up a to, čo budeš o chvíľu počúvať, má názov Transformácia energetiky a inovácií vo svetle aktuálnych udalostí na Ukrajine. Je to v anglickom jazyku, moderuje Zulf Hayet Khan, deputy chairman v Rade slovenských exportérov a rozprávajú sa, ale respektíve diskutujú Matthew Griffin, futurista 311 Institute, a ďalej Jan Weiterschutz, predseda Národnej vodíkovej asociácie Slovenska, Peter Blaškovič, vtedajší generálny riaditeľ CIA a Katarína Stríčková, PR a komunikácia v Inobat. Nech sa páči, this is it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Zulf Hayet Khan. I'm the deputy chairman at the Council of Slovak Exporters, and I'm today's panel's moderator. Today will be a broad discussion focusing on the impact of the war in Ukraine and what that will have on the energy crisis situation regionally, and the responses to what will most likely be the most pressing concern in the foreseeable future. We've assembled a team of experts who I'll introduce briefly in a minute, who will not only highlight the pressures and impact of the conflict, but also discuss the opportunities for transformation and innovation that is needed now more than ever. Before we expand on our debate, on behalf of us all at the Council of Slovak Exporters, which are now an official partner of Slovakia Tech for a second year in succession, we would like to extend a big thank you to Juraj Miško and the whole Slovakia Tech team for having us here today and working and putting this event together again. It's lovely to be here in Košice. So, on with the panel. Today we have the creme de la creme and the leading lights in terms of paving the way for a brighter future for Slovakia and beyond. And if I may go around, I'll ask you all briefly to introduce yourselves. First, if I may, I'll start with you, Katarína Stríčková, who's head of communications at Inobat and has very kindly stepped in for Marian last minute.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Katarína. I'm here for Inobat. I have been working for Inobat and IPM and our fundraising partner, Avanea, for about a year now. And I'm looking forward to the discussion. Thank you very much for the invitation to step in. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And now I'll move on to you, Jan Weiterschutz, who's chairman of the National Slovak Hydrogen Association. Many thanks for joining us, Jan.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here to speak about hydrogen, about the future green career for Slovakia.
And then moving on to Peter Blaskovic, General Director of the Slovak Innovation Agency.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation. So my name is Peter Blaskovic. As you said, I'm Director General of the Slovak Innovation Energy Agency. My background varies from basically from the private sector mainly. I spent a couple of years in the Middle East, starting up a new companies and especially telecom operators. Then I moved to healthcare within Slovakia. Now currently I'm in a position of Director General of the Slovak Innovation Energy, where we're focusing basically on the innovation as long as energy, which is currently definitely one of the most hot topics on the plate.
You said hot topics, so hopefully we all have enough energy to go into winter as it looms large. And last but not least, Matthew Griffin, who I actually had the privilege of seeing about 7 or 8 years ago in Dubai. He's a famed futurist and who's just fresh off his stage, having already done his speech on the Decarbo Mobility Tech Stage on future mobility, who's featured in Bloomberg and Forbes and the BBC, to name a few. Thanks, Matthew, for stepping in and joining us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's nice to be here again. So I was here 3 years ago, So, and it's good to see how things have actually changed, but in a positive way after everything that we've been through. So, yeah, lots to discuss.
Well, absolutely, and it's very important to have a different view on stuff. And I've seen some of your recent podcasts and output, and we'll touch on that in a minute, and our perception of what the future looks like. So I'll start by a generic conversation catalyst, and I see now that the International Energy Agency, of which Slovakia is a member, released a 10-point plan highlighting how to cut down on oil use. Some of these points included collectively that they would cut down on about 2.7 million barrels of oil per day over 4 months. And I'm just going to name a few here. Reduction of speed on motorways. Work from home when possible, car-free Sundays in cities, cheaper public transport and micro-mobility, car sharing, night trains instead of planes, promotion of electric cars where possible. I'm going to start with you, Peter. These sound like really drastic steps for how we need to cut down on our energy consumption and our reliance on oil. And if the Innovation Agency is sending out these directives, does this look like we're going backwards, or are we going forwards?
Thank you. Basically, I would say, as I heard those points, basically, I don't think they are that dramatic. I mean, decreasing the speed on the motorways, that's actually even safety. That's better, honestly. You know, I mean, that's not a big issue. I mean, unfortunately, those are still, I believe, let's say, the first step. I would call it ground zero steps for starting some energy decreasing of consumption of the energy. And however, I'm not sure how much really, in a percentage, we can decrease really consumption of energy, because of course it has two sides. Basically, as one of the last point is increase of electric mobility, right? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we decarbonize, not only decarbonize, we cut from the oil and fossil fuels. However, electricity is not cheap these ways as well.
Sure.
You know, and the price increases into the sky levels. So is this the right, for example, measure? I'm not really sure. So when we're going to, and if you ask me, and that's the question, you ask me basically, if... those are dramatic measures. No, the dramatic measures is where we're starting to really hit our own comfort, mm-hmm. right? Our own comfort means starting to less heating. We have to save in a different, so heating to the, in a winter, I'm talking, so to the less temperature. In a winter, in a summer, on the other thing, of course, not cooling to 18 degrees. I mean, you're saying you came from Dubai, you know the environment, I know it as well. When you have outside 50, you know that well, very well. Yeah. And I know everywhere there, every shopping mall is 18 degrees. And I, of course, it's a Middle East, doesn't matter. But I'm saying, I mean, overcooling and this sort of stuff. So we have to come to these things where we're starting to really touch our comfort. And for example, as I said, decreasing the speed on the motorways, that's not really a comfort. That's actually even a safety issue.
I think my issue here, and maybe a concern that might be shared by people who are, you know, we hear about the energy crisis every day in the news, and you're seeing it is plastered all over the media, CNN, Sky News, BBC, and it's imprinting on our soul that we have this huge crisis. And you touched on it now, Peter, with the idea of not having heating in our houses in the future, and it's 2022. I mean, we were brought up in Britain that you weren't allowed to turn your heating on until you saw icicles. and that may be a case that we have to adopt that in the future. In terms of hydrogen, Jan, we'll talk about renewable energies. Slovakia has a gilt-edged opportunity now to pivot from the over-reliance on fossil fuels and really push forward a hydrogen-fueled agenda. How is ENVAS's role going to be a catalyst for change here?
Thank you. We are a pretty young association. We were born before 4 years. And it took 2 years to come to open ministry doors at the Ministry of Economy. At the moment, we start really pushing forward the hydrogen as a topic in Slovakia. Hydrogen, you know, is a completely carbonless energy carrier. Mm-hmm. It's a carrier of future, because there is we don't need such an amount of investments to replace or to build a new infrastructure. We can use already exist infrastructure of natural gas. Mm-hmm. So it is not very difficult. And we have a strong transporting route, pipes, a big diameter here in Slovakia, where is flowing now gas. And this gas can be changed to those green gas, to hydrogen. From where? The answer is very, very easy, but realization is not so easy.
I'm going to stay with you now, because what we haven't highlighted here is that there is opportunity. Why have we waited for this terrible... I mean, there's no denying what's happening in neighboring Ukraine is absolutely terrible. We're all agreed with that. But we've waited. We are being reactionary, in my opinion, my less than humble opinion. We are being reactionary now. Suddenly, we have to push forward renewable energy agenda, carbon neutrality, net zero commitments, which are all very good to talk about. But in terms of infrastructure and investing in hydrogen, are people willing to spend money here in Slovakia to help you achieve the goals that you desire? Is that agenda now really being pushed forward? Is the war an opportunity for you?
It is a global agenda, not only Slovak agenda.
Yeah.
We want to, and then European agenda, when we go down from global size. European Union needs energy. We see now that there is a lack of energy. And the hydrogen is not a solution for this winter, but it is a systematic solution for the future to avoid another crisis which can come in the future. So we can bring hydrogen from the east side of Europe to the European Union, mm-hmm. not only to Slovakia, but to Czech Republic, Austria, and then to Germany. And there's a possibility to build partnerships, international partnerships, what is very, very, very important, not only with European Union, but now with Ukraine.
I will come to Matthew in a minute about the idea of reactionary, but I want to move quickly now to Katarina. Innobat has a real strong commitment to paving the way for the future. Battery innovation, all sorts of leading lights, in fact, as far as companies are concerned. How do you view Innobat's position on energy transformation currently?
I think as a company ourselves, we're trying to do everything we can to be as sustainable as possible. We basically have this vertical integration where we try to be as sustainable as possible throughout the whole value chain, from R&D to cell manufacturing, distribution, all the way to recycling. So we basically have this cradle-to-cradle mantra that we look at this whole thing very holistically, and we try to minimize our carbon footprint as much as possible. Our R&D center, for example, in Voderady is a brownfield project. So basically, we've reused a old building, and we're restructuring it to be useful for us. And we're hoping that our batteries will help pave the way for a more sustainable future.
Do you think we ever get to this stage? And I think about this. I think I read something Elon Musk once said about batteries. There is and I don't often want to quote Elon Musk, but anyway, isn't there the possibility that we can have a battery that can operate our house entirely, where we won't need any other source of energy? No gas, no electricity, no water.
I think eventually, yeah.
And shouldn't this be the way we should be heading towards?
Yeah, I think it should be the way we should be heading towards. But I also think that, you know, with being sustainable and with trying to be responsible towards the environment, there's a lot of backlash that comes with that, mm-hmm. right? So everyone is trying to look at, if you say you're sustainable and you're being eco-friendly and you're trying to meet net zero, everyone starts to attack the most minute things mm-hmm. in what you're trying to do just to expose you. So yeah, I think that's the way we should be going in, but it's very difficult.
I think you're right. Society wants to see people fail rather than succeed. Matthew, coming to you, I saw recently, I think the important thing is that distinction between the near future and the long future. Yeah. Everybody's talking about a reactionary result of what has happened, but we've had 25 years, 30 years to see this. How do you see it?
So humans are reactionary, let's face it. So when you have a look at the 1980s, we had Al Gore, the deputy president of the United States, saying we are entering a climate crisis. We had Fahrenheit 154 coming out, which was a sort of big, it wasn't really a movie, but it was kind of a big movie of its time, where saying, and the world is going, is already starting to burn, and it will only get worse. And when we have a look at governments around the world, governments sat on their hands, sat on their hands, sat on their hands. So, for example, I recently got the opportunity to speak with the German government, and they said, realistically, we know that we should have started the transition to renewable energies and eliminate our dependency or reduce our dependency on Russian oil and gas 15 years ago. Hmm. But we didn't. Now, this is sort of the kind of equivalent. We see the same things with artificial intelligence and. You know, I can tell you that in 2 years' time, a wolf is going to come to your door, the door of your house.
Yeah.
And it's going to get in and it's going to shred everything in your house. Now, on the one hand, you have two reactions. You could either go out today and build a fence, in which case that means that that future doesn't actually happen. You safeguard that future. You're prepared. You are resilient. You have all these sorts of bits and bobs. But in the vast majority of cases, we wait not until the wolf gets at the door. We wait until it's broken through the door. And then we go, bugger it. I should have built a fence 2 years ago or even last week. And yeah, when we have a look at COVID, you know, there's this general belief that 6 months after the World Health Organization says the pandemic is over, everyone goes, it's great, fantastic. But to give you an example, just on COVID. So COVID has cost the world economy $40 trillion. It's cost workers over $13 trillion in lost wages. If you want to create the next pandemic, it will cost you $5,000. You need to take some synthetic DNA. You need to take the genome from a bad virus and then sequence it and put it together. Okay, so I say, to create the next pandemic costs $5,000. Now, you say, well, why haven't you
just told? So that we're clear, kids at home, please don't do that.
Exactly. But you might sort of say, well, you know, why doesn't the government know about this and all that sort of stuff? Now, in 2018, Canadian researchers did exactly that. They de-extincted the horsepox virus. They showed it to the World Health Organization, and you can find the notes if you're happy to dig through the internet. They showed it to world leaders and said, the rise of synthetic biology means that we can now create the ultimate bioweapons. And the World Health Organization said, what was remarkable about this particular research wasn't the fact that they did it. It was the fact that they did it with relatively limited expertise, experience, resources, and cash. So where's our defense against genetic engineering? We're waiting for AI, basically, to start taking over the world before we produce some real regulations. I mean, AI has been around since, the 40s? And it's only this year that the European Union put AI regulations or guidance in place. We always wait, not until the point at which the wolf gets to our door. We wait until our house is burning, and then we go, maybe we should have a fire alarm. Maybe we should have a wolf fence.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Or a wolf fence.
Zulf fence, maybe.
Yeah, Zulf.
I wanted the previous speaker on the stage was talking about conscious capitalism, and Katarina alluded to it as well. But Peter, if I can bring you back in, now more than ever, we need an effective cooperation between the private sector and the public sector. Now more than ever, how do you see it? Let's use Slovakia as an example. Slovak Innovation and Energy Agency has set aside its terms for what the winter may look like. How much do you need to collaborate with your government to ensure that the good people who are sitting in this room will not be killed in January with their bills?
Even by cold.
Or by a cold.
All right. Well, Of course, it's a complex situation, and I would group it into the few measurements which the government should take, and government, yes, we all have to take. First of all, it's a reimbursement basically for the past losses. Okay, so basically compensating the loss of and the difference of the increase of the energy, which basically. The tool is there. It's called Temporary Crisis Framework, which European Commission issued. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, I believe, the only country which didn't use it so far. Germany, Austria, Czech Republic, they invested from the Czech Republic maybe 500 million euros. They invested into this. It's a framework in order to help the companies gain through some specific calculations, maybe around 30% of the difference of the electric price. That's backwards. That's a back check. So they can be still compensated what they paid. I'm talking now about the companies. Then sure. I will go to households. That's a different story. Then we have to put in a place compensation mechanism for the companies, which will work upwards as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, because of course the prices of the energy. They will increase. I mean, I have to be very realistic. I mean, this will not. It will not come back. It will not. The prices will not come back what we are used to. That's. I believe the point. If somebody doesn't agree with me, I'm happy to discuss. But I don't believe in that. This is the point. And then, of course, we have to make. And I'm talking still about. I'm still in the corporate sector.
Sure.
Then we have to make the gaps. For the highest, let's say, yeah, we have to gap the electricity, okay? Gap the price for the electricity. And this is where basically our economy and the base of like free economy and free trade,
sure.
This is where it failed. It failed. Because in a normal way, on the normal world or the normal economic theories, basically the market, if there is enough electricity, and I don't believe with the conflict in Ukraine there is less of electricity, the gas is a different thing about the electricity, it's really a less of the production. I'm not much aware of that. Okay, so there is the crisis in a high price of electricity prices, it's completely speculational capital.
Sure.
Or speculation. It's basically the traders, they can see maybe there is a fear of the energy and this sort of stuff, of lack of energy. So the prices are increased. The cost of producing the price from the nuclear power plant is still absolutely the same. So what we have to do for the companies consuming, not the producers, consuming the electricity, we have to gap them. But here is the point. The companies are not much interested in how much that will be.
Sure.
Sounds maybe ridiculous, but they just need to know how much it will be. Because they now setting up the plans for the new year. They're bidding for the new contract. They creating the proposal. They have to plan their production for the next year. What they have to put in when they putting their cost sheet, what number they have to put in the field of energy? They don't know. And this is the main point.
Sure.
So if we will be able to tell the companies, the corporate sector, look, it will be even 500 per megawatt. It will be even 500. Then at least they know for next year it will be 500. And if this 500 will be within the European Union and of course agreed on, or it will be somewhere around this, then it's okay, because then they are able to, of course, to bid, to be competitive and this sort of stuff. So this is for the companies. Households are a little bit different because households are regulated. That's a regulated. So basically, whatever we're talking about the crisis, so far the direct crisis for the households didn't occur. So the prices are still the same. They will change from the upcoming year. So this is.
But how will that look? January, suddenly someone's going to be told, my bill for everything will be, you said the knock-on effect of all the other stuff, my bill will be 45% more, 50%.
And this is the point. This shall not happen. This cannot happen because, yes, this will lead to the huge problems. Because currently what's happening, the company has increased energy prices. They immediately started to pay high prices. So what they obviously do, they transform all of this increased cost basically to their products. So basically as a household, you don't have a higher energy bill, but you're paying more for the goods which they are produced because the energy source is higher. So obviously at the end, you're losing the money. Yeah?
Yep.
You're paying, I mean, your house balance is still, it's different than it used to be. And if we add to this, even that you will have increased price as a household, that's a disaster, I would say. I mean, from the economic situation where Slovakia is, as to the incomes, as to the how the households are in order to, I'm saying, income and basically their economical stability. And this is very critical. So I believe the households needs to be really strongly gapped by the agreement with National Slovak Electricity Production Company, Slovak Elektrárne, with other producers. And then we have to bring another cheap energy into the system. This has to be priority for the households. This is very important. And we have to look, and because I've been notified, and that's not really a joke, and I will maybe say it here first time, that basically we still thinking that only the electricity, consists of many parts, the cost of electricity for households. Sure. It's basically the commodity itself, the power part, and then it's a price for distribution and for the main power line, SEPS and this sort of stuff. I've been told that currently those items, which I do believe shall be either on the same way, plus even it can be less, it's the current proposition that they will be six times higher. Not the power part, and I have the directly from the National Regulation Agency office, which of course now currently, I don't know if there is somebody from the government which will be fired tomorrow. the thing is that but it's true, and I mean now it's currently, I mean it's not, they thinking how to do that, but I don't understand the logic between this. Why, for example, the TPS or TSS, this is the shortcut for those parts of the transportation, the thing, why this shall be increased? I understand they're putting the cost there, the cost higher because of the higher, they have as well energy, it's for their own use, the energy is more expensive. But this has to be handled very well by the government and the controlled or the independent national regulation office. That's.
I mean, because we see every day alarming headlines. Schools might not go back in January because they can't afford their energy bills. Universities will go online because they can't turn the lights on or can't turn the heating on. So it's alarming to hear these types. And maybe these are headlines just to frighten people. But what I wanted to talk about also, this is not that we need to save pennies for January, but also that there is opportunity here. The war has given us an unfortunate opportunity for Slovakia to be a leader in many ways. Are there areas, would you say, Katarina, where Inabat can set an example perhaps to the wider European community in what you do in terms of the battery production? Obviously, we know the impact of lithium mining. But generally, is there an opportunity for Slovak companies, and I'll move to you, Jan, after this as well, to show other European nations that this is a small country that has technology, that has R&D, that has universities like they have in Košice, that is developing opportunities to be a leader within the European Union? Katarina first.
I think, Inabat definitely sets the example in the way that we use this vertical integration to give a circular solution to all our customers. On the other hand, as you mentioned, lithium mining, it is true that it's not 100% bulletproof. However, it is the most sustainable way to have to store electricity as of right now. And you do have to mine everything. And it's true that you have to use around 500,000 gallons of water to mine one ton of lithium. But then when you do mine it, lithium can be recycled forever. So that makes it more sustainable. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about as well, that people will attack this. No one talked about lithium 15 years ago. But all of a sudden, when we're trying to do something good and we're trying to, produce e-vehicles and kind of pave the way to electrifying transport, everyone is going to take the bait and talk about lithium and say how it's not 100% bulletproof. But it is currently the most sustainable way to do it.
You make an excellent point there, and you mentioned the 500,000 liters of water, and that moves seamlessly to you in terms of water. And you were saying that the opportunities that are a result, will we have any water left at this rate? I mean, if one avocado takes 49 liters of water, to rear. How is there a paucity of the water? Are we running out of that as a natural resource?
Yeah, water is the topic of the future, not only the desert lands, but also in Slovakia and Central Europe and all Europe and all the world. We need water also for production of hydrogen, but the hydrogen cycle is an artificial cycle, of, like natural cycle of the water. So we need water, then consumption cause that we also create water, creating water. So the topic of the water with hydrogen is not so hot, I think, like in other industrial sector. But there is another way how to generate hydrogen, not only through electrolysis, as many of you know, the principle, but you can use also your waste from your home. Your waste is suitable for pyrolysis. This is process where the thermical consumption of the waste cost, you have a hydrogen, the other gases, and at the end of this process could be another process that destroy all the bonds of the molecules, and you have pure hydrogen and carbon black, what is suitable for another feedstock, as I heard, that we may be in the future move from lithium ion batteries to carbon batteries. And this is a nice value chain from your waste to smart batteries.
And I think we're getting some approval there from the audience, which is great. Thank you for your interaction. Matthew, we've talked a lot about amongst the panel. I'll come back to Peter in a bit about the energy mix of Slovakia, which I was very surprised about. Actually, Slovakia, as far as a European country, has a pretty good energy mix in terms of low carbon emissions. But our future is something that we're being very short-sighted. You used the wolf analogy. The story. What are our options 25 years down the road? What do we look like things are going to happen?
Yeah. So Katarina's right. So when we have a look at lithium ion batteries, for example, what we do is we say we're going to move away from a fossil fuel based economy because it's kicking huge amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which is heating the earth and causing problems. So we then try to, I say do good, but we then try to do what we call jumping the S-curve. We jump to another type of technology to power our vehicles, for example, lithium-ion batteries. Now, it was long flagged that lithium-ion batteries can't be recycled, and we have to mine lithium out of the earth. Bearing in mind, 80% of the lithium on the planet today, in terms of mining, is out of, really, China and South America. So what we're good at is we're very good at putting that wolf at the door and saying lithium ion batteries mean that we are going to have to mine more lithium out of the earth, and then we have a lithium ion battery problem. So we have solutions to those already. So firstly, we now have the technologies and the innovations that let us recycle 99% of all of the lithium out of lithium ion batteries. Companies like Skanksk, and others. Same with wind turbines.
Sure.
We have loads of wind turbine blades all over the place. We can recycle those as well. When it comes to lithium mining, we have new desalination technologies, new filters, new catalysts that now mean that we can extract lithium directly from seawater. Now, seawater contains over 5,000 times more lithium than even the richest lithium ores out of China. So not only do we have the technology to reduce the cost of desalinated water by over two-thirds, we can also mine seawater for lithium and uranium. And you can sell uranium for about $5,000 a kilo. Now, when we start having a look at things like the water crisis, so for example, I travel the world. I was in Italy and Switzerland 2 weeks ago, and the lady that was I was with said, look at Lake Como, it's the lowest it's ever been. We've lost 50% of our agricultural produce because of the droughts. You know, when we have a look at California, 85% of California is in drought. We're getting to the point with Lake Mead and the Hoover Dam that if the Hoover Dam drops by 1 meter as a hydroelectric dam, it will stop generating clean electricity, period. That gives California a bunch of problems. But then again, when we also look at things like lithium-ion batteries, there is a Japanese, British sort of more than European, but a Japanese, European slash British, but also an American consortium, including Tesla, to try to create new batteries that don't rely on lithium and cobalt. So we have metal-free batteries. Now we have metal-free batteries coming through. They're 600% more energy dense than lithium ion. When we talk about more efficient lithium ion battery creation and use, we can 3D print at lithium ion batteries at the nanoscale, which means that lithium ion battery anodes have an amazingly huge surface area. So by 3D printing a lithium ion battery, we have lithium ion batteries already that charge 500% faster, that have 400% the energy density. Then when we talk about energy storage, increasingly we aren't tag-tied to lithium ion grid-scale storage. We can store, and we've done this already, so this isn't the realm of fiction and fantasy and futurism. We can store electricity in plastic. There is a company called Polyjoule in America that does this. We can store water in, we can store energy in water, so we convert the water to ice and then we convert it back. That's actually a highly successful European business. Mm-hmm. We can store energy in concrete. We have British Petroleum create turning buildings into batteries, and we do that in a particular type of way. We can store energy in bricks. If you put carbon nanotubes into bricks, those bricks store electricity. But the cost of those bricks is identical to other bricks on the market. We have iron batteries coming through, which store energy basically for 60 months, where lithium ion batteries typically store energy for about 12 hours on the big grid scale.
Okay,
storage
stuff. So
we've got loads of solutions to the wolf at the door that we're already seeing.
My question to you, and you brought this up, and I will ask all of you this, and I'll stick with you now, Matthew, is that there are all of these options available. First of all, is there a desire to implement these? You mentioned in your speech with my old mate Richard Dean in Abu Dhabi about governments wanting to get re-elected and plans for 10, 15 years never really materialized because people are concerned more about being re-elected and their cycle of governance. But now, more than ever, this is the future. Yeah. We don't have it doesn't look terribly bright at the moment. Yeah. Is there an affordable way to make all of those suggestions happen quickly?
Yes. Okay. So here's the thing. So as Peter sort of said a little bit earlier, and you said earlier, basically, about the current energy crisis that we have today, it is complex. We have people who will die. We will have people who will be pushed to unbearable debt levels and everything else. So dealing with today's energy crisis is insanely complex. It's hurting people. It's hurting businesses. VW are shutting down factories. If we'd prepared, what we'd be talking about is this. I'd be saying, there is maybe an energy supply problem because electric vehicles still need 3 times the electricity that we're generating as countries today. But if we had switched to renewables already, I'd be saying this. The cost of generating electricity from solar power is now $20 per megawatt hour. Solar panels and solar power is the cheapest cost of electricity generation, according to the IEA, in the history of the planet. Okay? In addition to that, when we have a look at the UK and other parts of sort of Northern Europe, we have wind farms that are now generating, in quite a lot of countries' cases, 100% of all the electricity they need. In fact, they're generating so much electricity that in the UK, the electricity companies are paying us to take that electricity because they can't store it. So if we had already switched to renewable energy, for example, I'd be saying, so what does it all feel like for you to be being paid money to consume electricity and sell the surplus electricity from your solar panels to your friends and your next door neighbours? As opposed to, so how, as we saw with the presenter earlier from the Netherlands, and he said, quite a lot of his friends have electricity bills coming through right now saying you owe us 11,000 euros. What bank are you going to go to take a loan out? So when we talk about the wolf at the door,
yeah.
At IBM, any time that we were 45% reliant on a single supplier, and when we talk about supply chains as well,
yeah.
If you were heavily reliant on one single supplier, aka Russia and oil and gas, most organizations would go, that's a bad thing. we're going to try and diversify. And then you would put a plan in place and execute it. So we might still be in a conundrum today, but not as much of one if we'd prepared for the wolf at the door. But we didn't.
And we clearly haven't prepared.
Which the lesson is, prepare for the wolf at the door.
And Peter, you were talking before about the energy mix here in Slovakia. And in fact, the reserves and your trips to the Middle East to talk about how, again, we're being reactionary with regards to LNG and the ports not having enough availability. But give us an indication of how Slovakia's energy mix looks like currently.
Okay, so basically Slovakia is traditionally it's 58% of the energy mix is basically a nuclear power. Right. So basically this is a quite indication that the nuclear power is a really strong backbone source of the stable and basically from my point of view, from the operational perspective, very clean energy, because in standard operation it's a clean energy, so all the steam from the from the cooling towers, it's a water steam. So basically, that's another issue. I know we have all the bad memories from the accident that happened. Either it's a Fukushima, either it's Chernobyl. But as we discussed earlier before our this, I don't know. I believe the oil tankers which they leaked the oil into the sea has been much more disastrous. Maybe disastrous. I don't know as to the spread of other sicknesses.
Well, Matthew said people are going to die.
People are going to. Yeah, he said it. I didn't like that because that's not very positive. But no, I'm not saying I didn't like it. But it doesn't sound really positive. But I admit it. I'm positive.
Just on that sort of point, quickly. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, because in summer we have an air conditioning problem.
Yeah.
And there are more heat-related deaths in European cities now than ever before. So it's not just a winter, it's also a summer problem as well. But from an energy perspective.
Yeah. You're right. Because actually, yes, and now the summers are getting much hotter, so that's obviously it will be increased. Yeah. So, anyway, back to energy mix. So nuclear is definitely our core backbone. That's why even... we working on the building and finishing the Mochovce as an additional power source. Of course, there are another upcoming projects to come with the new nuclear. I visited here the presentation of Mr. Stuller, the chairman of the board of Javis.
Yes.
It was a very interesting presentation because he was talking about even the small modular reactors, the large installation, this sort of stuff. And I see the future there because it's a stable energy. As I'm saying, from an operational point of view, it's a clean thing. So, what's interesting, as you pointed out, we have a quite a good number as from the energy mix, around 17% from the renewable energy sources. Obviously, I mean, where it comes from, I mean, that sounds like we have such a solar energy, we have geotherm, we have wind turbines. No, we don't. Okay? But what we have, we have a large water power plant, which is Gabčíkovo, which is our largest water plant. And basically, this of course increase that number. We have a quite significant. I mean, solar power. There are many solar power plants. Plus, of course, the companies they decrease their consumption of the from the primary from the grid energy by compensating from the renewable energy sources. But still, the issue of storing the energy as to batteries and this stuff. It's still an issue. For the small household, for the small companies possible, for the larger enterprises, that's an issue. However, so basically, I believe from the energetic mix, we are not in a bad path, okay, in a way forward.
And you can reassure the people here that there is enough energy reserves in Slovakia to last well into the winter.
Now I'm talking about the electricity.
I know, but generally...
That's true, yes. As for this winter, okay, as to the what our storage facilities for the natural gas, for the crude oil and electricity, no, we don't store it basically, but we have to buy it. Yes, there is for this winter. So that's fine, but this winter is like, again, as Matthew said, it's a part of this to being prepared. I mean, this winter we're fine, we do this, and we hope the crisis will end. I hope that as well, but it might not. You know, and that will be a problem in this case.
Do you think, Peter, actually, I'll stay with you. Do you think in the event that sanctions were to be eased, do you think we'll go... You said there's no chance things will go back to the way they were before in terms of prices. The message from Russia is very different. They said, we will resume as we operated before and we'll carry on. Is that realistic or is that something that is not going to happen?
I mean, they're still continuing. I mean, honestly, in a way of delivering, okay, the natural gas through the pipelines which are actually passing even through Slovakia, there's nothing changed. There's no change of the amount of the gas sure. which has been delivered, right? I mean, this is the thing. What causing the thing is that when it comes to the day of this person, I would not use any bad words, but we know what we're talking about, right? When he changes mind in the day, that I will cut it off. And this is the problem. That's the problem. That's unpredictability. Yeah. And the whole thing is, and as Matthew is saying, being prepared and predictability of even our measure, like measures, what we're taking care of, or what you have to foresee. You know, this is very important. So in natural gas, of course, what we did is in the Ministry of Economy, we said, okay, even though that through the Druzhba, this name of the pipeline from the east, sure. the gas is still flowing, that's fine, it's okay, but we brought a lot of gas from the LNG, which was I think it was bought in Norway. It's an American sort of LNG. Now currently working to Saudi Arabia, so we're trying to bring LNG as well from over there. The LNG is okay. I mean, as a source, there is LNG. Two problems: lack of transportation boats. It's a shortage, right? I mean, this is not a part of the boat which you come and you buy on a stock, right? That's like it's like a Boeing and Airbus. You are in a waiting list, and or somebody sells you something which has. And obviously, Slovakia is not really supposed to have like own transportation. That doesn't make any sense. But the biggest things which now we're facing are the ports. Ports are completely occupied. I mean, everybody doing LNG, they understand that it's a good alternative. They're filling their storage facilities with this gas. Even if it will be cut it off, you have it filled, but you have still bringing it. You know, because the gas, the reservoirs, sure. they're decreasing, so we have to still fill them up. And how do you do it? You can bring the ships will be waiting in the port, but where they will pump it out, or it's a liquid natural gas, so basically, yes, where they will pump it out to the pipeline, not to the tanks, because this is not what we can imagine.
You mentioned also earlier that the Czech Republic, for example, are creating these mobile ports.
Yeah. Well, actually, now currently, because yes, there is this, let's say, traditional ports where the tank comes, it parks, and it's connected to the pipeline, this sort of stuff, pipe. But they coming to this floating ports. I don't know what to say, they're floating. So basically, they can be connected to the huge pipe. They are connected. It's around maybe it can be 2 kilometers up to the off the shore. Still, we're talking about 12 nautical miles. It's a territorial water, so you can do that within this radius. And it's a huge floating buoy.
Sure.
And basically, there where the tanker comes, connects, and basically, actually, it's even quite good because you know even if you have waves and this sort of stuff, that disconnects and this sort of stuff. This is actually what the Kuwait did and what Kuwait is doing, because in Kuwait there is a shallow water mm-hmm. in the I would say Persian Gulf, but if there would be a Middle East,
Iranian Gulf.
Don't tell me that. You have to use Arabic Gulf, you know, Arabian Gulf, otherwise they'll kill you. Anyway, that's just spiced up. But the thing is, what is it? That they're using it long time ago because they know it's a shallow, so the tanker can comes there. So they're doing this. And to your question, yes, the Czechs, they're starting to do this. I think they will have own. We have, for example, a good facility in Poland. We now just do the interconnection of pipeline from Poland LNG ports to Slovakia. However, Poland saying it's full of capacity. Is it only for them? They already sold it. Of course, this discussion needs to be taken. There needs to be mapped. How are the capacities of the ports? And new ports, either the floating ones, even or increasing the ports, this is the way forward as well, because LNG will be play a significant role in our
next decade. Absorption.
Cutting off the gas or decreasing the gas from the Russian Federation.
I get it. I want to talk about a new product, and then we'll come to you, Jan, in a bit about the H21 NS&D project. But Katarina, there is Avanea has recently launched, which is part of the LPM group of companies, which is a new endeavor, which is, as you mentioned, a cradle-to-cradle investment vehicle for infratech. And I said last year, as I sat on this very panel talking about something different, that if we don't innovate, we die. And I'm of the opinion that nothing has changed in that last 12 months. So where do you think Avanea's role is in developing this deep tech, infratech, that can help the renewable energy crisis, that which is so evident today?
I think, you know, the projects that we invest in are all aimed at either decarbonization or digitalization. So the role is that that we are the vehicle for investors, essentially, to invest money and to improve the world in these two spheres that are believed by our founders and by all of us at the company to be the most important factors currently.
Is there anything that you're actively investing in that you think is, wow, this is game changer stuff?
Well, yeah, we invest in...
You want to tease anything here?
We invest in Innobat, for example. or InnoCloud, for example, our AI storage facility. So yeah, I mean, that's the circular economy that I was talking about. It's not just Innobat and its value chain, but also Avanea has the same strategy that, you know, you have a whole vehicle where you invest and we give you the places of focus where the money goes.
And I mentioned, Jan, just now that you two obviously know each other very well. You're always on panels together. Were you with the Minister of Economy, the previous Minister of Economy at Pohoda Festival? I saw that even on Instagram, so you guys are very young as well. But I'd like to talk a little bit, Jan, about the European HY to Tech Challenge and the H2I and S&D project. That deals with the research and impact of hydrogen on gas infrastructure, and a little bit about your hydrogen plan, because you're the author.
Yes, I'm co-author of the plan, not only one. Mr. Blaskovic sitting here is another one. I think that most important in hydrogen in Slovakia is to support local generation and consumption, and also back up with the distributive channels from not only one country, like we have now, gas, but back to another maybe 10, 20 countries, in which war occur, it doesn't
make a difference.
Make a difference for in import channels. Now is an opportunity to, after the war in Ukraine, I hope we build in west side of Ukraine again. And Ukraine will need export to reach money for rebuild their destroyed infrastructure. And one of the medium is hydrogen. They can build a lot of renewables there. They have hydro, they have wind and solar. And export ton of hydrogen through Slovakia to the Western Europe. So we will be part of the hydrogen, European hydrogen backbone, the central European part. And this project is really huge, supported by European Union. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the support directly to Ukraine to help us to rebuild our huge pipes, maybe at first one pipe, to be able to transport pure hydrogen at first to our industry, meaning of maybe here in Košice for the steel making production, there is a way without carbon to produce green steel, which is now very attractive, for example, for car producers. And also we have a chemical industry here in Slovakia, in meaning of, for example, Duslo, which is producer of the mineral fertilizers, and is company is needs a lot of hydrogen, 100,000 tons per year. Now they have a gray hydrogen from gas. Mm-hmm. Now it's very expensive, And if the Ukraine built such sources, green sources, with very, very cheap electricity production, already today they compete with the gray hydrogen. So they don't need any additional financial support to be competitive with current prices. Of course, we await that the prices will go down, but also the technology will decrease their capex. So we await that at the end of this decade, the capex of the electrolyzers or another technologies will decrease at half. So this is the point mm-hmm. when hydrogen start compete another fossil fuels without any incentives.
And it's very good that you mentioned that, because that's a direct example of how there is opportunity even during the crisis. All three of you, and maybe to a lesser extent, Matthew, have agreed on one thing, is that we need to have these discussions. And it's very important for us to be sitting here on this stage today among you all to discuss the reality of the energy crisis that is prevalent today. But I'm concerned that all we do is discuss. Are we also in desperate need of people who are going to action these plans? I'm concerned that we exist in eco chambers, eco clusters, where everybody agrees that the right thing to do is the right thing to do, but no one actually does the right thing. Do you think in the case of Slovakia, that's the case?
Absolutely. I mean, if there's a question for me, sorry.
For all three of you, and then I'll come to you, Matthew. Yeah. Is that the case you feel in Slovakia? We're all talking, we're all drinking the same Kool-Aid, but no one's doing anything about it. So there's inaction when there is opportunity. And talking about catchphrases, Matthew, it's this net zero equation that we always hear about. And I did some preliminary research the other day, and there are 9 requirements for solving the net zero equation and ensuring what they call an orderly transition. No such thing as an orderly transition if you saw Brexit, but physical building blocks, technological innovation, the ability to create at-scale supply chains and support infrastructure, availability of necessary natural resources, and then there are the economic ones, effective capital reallocation, and financing structures, management of demand shifts, compensating mechanisms, and so forth. And then the last portion is governance. These building blocks, are they, again, things that people talk about and don't do?
So I'm going to generally, so yes and no, but I'm going to put some caveats in. So when you have conversations with governments, the vast majority of governments basically are full of elected officials, and those officials are elected typically on a 4-year basis. So you can imagine, for example, today, an elected official saying, what we're going to do is we're going to, in Slovakia, invest 20 billion euros in building out future hydrogen capacity and everything else. The electorate, as well as the opposition, will instantly come in and say, yes, but Slovakia has problems today. Shouldn't we spend that money on healthcare, education, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Now, these are elected officials. And so if we say, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take money and we're going to use that money and prepare for the future, kind of almost at the expense of today, to some respect, the electorate will vote them out. So a lot of the elected government officials basically have to be populist, because otherwise they just don't get in, which means that we have these termly cycles. Now, from a transition, that's kind of the no. So governments basically sort of talk a very good game. Mm-hmm. You know, German government, yes, we know that we should have done it. Why didn't you then? Because, you know, didn't get round to it. However, basically, we are actually moving the dial. So I'm going to give you some numbers. So it used to be the case that most energy projects were fossil fuel. Last year, we installed 250 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity globally versus 65 gigawatts of fossil fuel capacity, energy generating capacity. And as the IEA says, that's just a continuing trend. It's getting lower and lower and lower. Energy, so investment in the oil and gas sector 10 years ago to develop new fields was $750 billion. Last year, it was $250 billion. Wow. When we have a look at the investors, what we kind of have is, you know, as we've seen with Katarina basically and the accelerators, is we have a lot of startups saying, we have solutions to today's problems. And we have people who need those solutions. The problem that we generally have with renewable energy, basically, is actually the deployment. So Bloomberg say that to move from an oil economy to a renewable economy will cost us $92 trillion. So I sat down basically with ministers of Dubai and the Middle East, as well as a lot of investors. So I work with investors with about $50 trillion of assets, companies like BlackRock, Citi, Legal & General. And when you actually have a look at the investors are going, so the problem we have today is high gas prices, for example, sustainability, climate change, and everything else. Solving those problems is good business because it's a problem to solve. And there is money to be made, opportunity. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is, if you look at Citi, Citigroup are now investing $1 trillion in sustainable ESG-based technologies, which include energy. Legal & General are investing $600 billion. BlackRock are transforming their $13 trillion portfolio to focus on sustainability, you know, which energy obviously sort of comes under. So what we now have is we now have this, because you need the bankers. We have a startup that says, I can solve your problem for you, but the problem that I have is I don't have enough money to build 10 wind farms across Europe. Mm-hmm. The investors come in and go, they do the due diligence, obviously, so paraphrasing, and they go, that's great, have some money. And then we bring in the rest of the ecosystem, the people who can project manage building a wind farm, you know, all that kind of stuff, which actually happens to be the oil and gas giants, which is ironic. And then that's how we transition. So on the one hand, governments are a little bit hamstrung and a little bit short-termism, but we've solved that problem in the Middle East with the economic development agencies and all that sort of stuff.
And there's no democracy there, so...
Yeah, which is also a thing, yeah. But increasingly, investors are saying, big problem, opportunity to make lots of money if we find the right alternative kinds of investments and we back the right horses. And if you're an investor, who do you back today? Do you back BP or do you back companies like Odense, especially out of Norway, basically, who are now the world's largest wind farm company?
Well, on that note, I'm going to have to draw a conclusion on today's panel. I'd like to thank all of you individually. Matthew, thank you for that. And those numbers are astonishing. So there's definitely opportunity and money. Jan, thank you very much for joining us today. Katarina, thank you very much for joining us. And Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to conclude by saying that given that yesterday was the funeral of Her Majesty Elizabeth II, it seems only right to leave you with a quote that she made during her Christmas address to the nation in 2019. It is worth remembering that it's often the small steps and not the giant leaps that bring about the most lasting change. I'd like to thank all of you, the team at Slovakia Tech, for having us again this year, and we wish you a very successful event going forward. Thank you.
Thank you.